It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 158. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined first by Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars on KSL. We talk about the fallout from Taysom Hill's injury and the loss to Utah State. We also look forward to what we might expect to see both offensively and defensively from the Cougars in their upcoming game against Central Florida. Matt and I then talk about what happened in that game. We also preview the game against the Knights, including if we see an expanded role for Jamal Williams and what we might expect to see from the Cougar defense. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can catch us at LoyalCougars.com, on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, and of course, you're going to listen to us right now. All right, welcoming back to the podcast our most frequent guest. We haven't had him on in a while, but Greg Rebell, voice of the Cougars on KSL. Greg, welcome back to the podcast.
Adam, thank you.
So we'll start with the negative stuff first and get it out of the way. Obviously, Friday night was a tough game for Cougar fans, even worse, of course, for the team and particularly for Taysom Hill. When you saw that him go down and everything that was happening on the sidelines, what was running through your head as someone that covers the team and also roots for the team?
Well, on the run itself, I didn't think anything. I'm far enough away from the play that it was at the tackle. And I was saying whatever I was saying, getting ready for the next play, when Mark Lyons said he's limping off. And that's when I noticed Taysom Hill going off the field and said, uh-oh, as I saw him get placed on the table. And then as the next play is, you know, getting ready to be run, or Christian was coming on, able to see in our booth the replay, and then you can see the leg break. And at that point, you know, you see the foot and the ankle bend in such a way that you think he's at least got an injured ankle. And then you see the replay again, and then you can say, yeah, I think I see his leg breaking. And you know, so within a few minutes, it looked pretty dire. And then, you know, Nate Mikkel, our sideline guy, is updating us on the cart coming out. And then we see an air cast and all those things within a few minutes tell you it's a fracture. And at that point, his season's over. And, you know, in a lot of ways with it, you know, BYU's perfect season at the same time. So, you know, it was a terrible night.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a tweet bag question, a text from a friend of mine, Seth, asking if that 15-minute stretch between Taysom's injury and then the subsequent touchdown pass that happened pretty quickly after that, if that was one of the worst stretches of turn of events in a BYU football season. You've been a fan and an announcer for a long time. Is that about as quick of a bad turnaround as you've seen for the Cougars in the past?
It was 4 minutes of clock time. You know, maybe 15 minutes of real time, but 4 minutes of clock time, and you know, with it, a game and a season, you know, irreparably, you know, damaged. And so it was very dramatic. I would go back to a few seasons ago at Utah. BYU took, I believe, a 16-0 lead into the fourth quarter in Salt Lake City, lost the game, I think 17-16, and that one seemed to change just as quickly and just as strangely. In a very short period of time, a little longer, I think, on the clock, obviously, but it's one of those similar kinds of things when you just don't see anything that dramatic occurring. And against Utah State, you know, they're up 14-7, and within a few minutes, you know, the game's, you know, 21-14, and now Taysom's out, and then it's 28-14 heading into halftime. And even that said, I mean, you know, BYU's comeback even this season for victories. And I think as long as Taysom was healthy, you know, down 21-14, down 28-14, I think it's a very doable thing. It became less doable once Taysom left the game. And so, you know, I think anything that was to happen that night and from this point forward is viewed through the prism of Taysom Hill's presence or absence. And everything changes without him. And you just can't ignore that fact. I'm not saying that Christian Stewart can't come in and perform well and even lead BYU to, you know, to multiple victories, but you know, we're talking about a Heisman Trophy candidate that that does things that we've not seen done before. And so you just don't pick up and expect the same kinds of results with Christian Stewart. yeah, a lot of different things have to happen. Bronco says it, that the whole team has to come together now and play in a more unified fashion, and all of them be better together, because Taysom's not there to bail you out anymore. And Taysom could bail you out. Taysom was the consummate and the ultimate bailout quarterback, and he's not there anymore. And so, you know, it'll take a lot of other people playing a lot better than they have to this point for BYU to have the kind of season they'll look back and say was a success.
Well, looking forward, Greg, they've obviously a quick turnaround, long road trip out to Florida. Christian Stewart has been obviously with the team for a while now, and two times actually, but he's been with the team and looked pretty good in fall camp, according to all reports. Is the offense going to look markedly different? Because we know he can run a little bit, not maybe to Taysom's ability, but are we going to see a similar, you know, read option, a lot type of plays, or do you think Anai makes some significant changes to the playbook based on the skills of the quarterback he has running the show now?
Well, Christian said it's going to be the same offense. I would hope that doesn't mean the same number of carries, because he's not Taysom Hill. He's not built like Taysom Hill. He's not as fast as Taysom Hill, and he can't take the punishment that Taysom Hill takes. So if they want to get him, you know, banged up quickly, they'll do exactly what they did with Taysom Hill. If they don't, they'll do some different things. They'll hand off a lot more, and even though Christian Stewart says it's the same offense and he'll still be zone reading and all that stuff, I think it would be, you know, wise to keep him as upright as possible. You don't want to get down to the next guy. You know, you're already dealing with somebody you didn't think would have to be playing, and I don't think you want to go to a guy that you know, was most recently a tight end. So I think that you probably do have to make some adjustments, and why would people not expect BYU to do that? You know, it's why these coaches get paid what they get paid, is to come up with game plans for varying situations. And, you know, I don't think you can run exactly the same thing, because that would mean you're putting Christian Stewart in more jeopardy than he needs to be in right now. He needs to learn how to just, you know, get first downs and find his receivers and throw and hand off to the people that are going to help him and help BYU. I don't think you need to be throwing, you know, Christian Stewart out there saying make Taysom Hill type plays as many times a day as Taysom Hill makes, because I don't think he can do that. It's certainly not right now.
Yeah.
So I would expect, you know, some kind of modifications. It just makes sense. Plus, he showed quite a confidence in throwing the football the other night, and you'd like to think that, you know, 35% is not going to be his every game, you know, routine. I think he'll be better as he goes along. But I think that if he's got a strength, that's where it's going to be.
Yeah, and obviously we talked last time we had you on about some of the depth at wide receiver. Now that has been pared back a little bit, because last time we talked it was before Nick Kurtz had his injury. Now the timing is right for him to come back sometime soon. Is that going to happen this year, Greg, or do we expect a medical redshirt? And does this, what happened with Taysom, at all affect the decision with him?
Well, he's, you know, he's back. They said he'd play 10 plays last week, and he didn't. He got a couple, two or three snaps in last week. He could still play this next week in medical redshirt. As long as it happens in the first half of the season and you've not played more than 30% of games, you can get a medical redshirt. So Nick Kurtz could ostensibly play this next game and then still get a medical redshirt. Yeah, I think some things have changed. If he's not going to make it back to full speed, and, you know, we were led to believe he was back last week, even though it was only 10 snaps they said they were going to give him, you know, we were led to believe that he'd recovered and would be back with the team. And Robert and I said he didn't know of any consideration to redshirt, and he could be snowing the media. I mean, he wouldn't be the first coach to, you know,
right,
to you know, to hold something back from the media relative to a player's redshirt or playing, but. You know, if he's really not back and he's not able to be full speed this season, you know, I guess at this point I could see it happening, just because they're not going to go 12-0 now. You know, before, my belief was you've got to win every game, and if he can help you win even just a few of those every games, you play him. That's not the situation anymore. 11-1, even if BYU were to win out, I think you'd have to see everybody else in college football have at least three losses for BYU to be a consideration for a New Year's Six bowl now. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you know, to me, it was 12-0 or bust. You know, we talk about this here in week 5 or week 6. You never know. You know, week 13, week 14 comes along and things have changed. So you never say never, but I really do believe that, you know, BYU's chance this year was 12-0 or bust. And even now, without Taysom Hill, you know, BYU's certainly not going to be in the situation where they're going to be favored in every game, which was the case just a week ago. I think you could argue that with Taysom Hill, BYU was going to be favored in every game. They won't be now, and not only that, you could argue that of BYU's six remaining FBS games, in at least half of them, it might be a crapshoot as to who wins the game. And we're talking about those three teams being Boise State on the road, Nevada with Cody Fajardo, and Cal with Jared Goff. And, you know, the BYU team that lost to Utah State last week would have probably lost to all three of those teams. So, you know, again, things have changed a great deal with one guy going out.
Well, let's flip to the other side of the ball. The obvious thing that's been a problem the last few games has been an inability of the BYU defense, especially without blitzing, to put any pressure on the quarterback whatsoever. And then, of course, this week we also had some mistakes by defensive backs on a couple of big plays. Is the defense, even with Hill's injury, is the defense the biggest problem that needs to get solved for the Cougars to right the ship and, as you said, maybe pull to become that team that's maybe favored in some of these games going forward?
No, the absence of Taysom Hill is still the biggest problem because with Taysom Hill, you can overcome those defensive inadequacies and still outscore people, and that's what they were doing. Without Taysom Hill, you know, that's probably not in the cards anymore, which now leads you to, can the defense improve to make it so that Christian Stewart doesn't have to be, you know, that productive and that prolific with this offense? That has to be the next thing on the agenda. But the first issue is Taysom Hill not being there. That brings us to the number two point. Can the defense get any better? I think what we're seeing right now is a very average defensive line. And it's just not making any plays. And Bronson Cafusi is just not himself. He was out for the last 2.5 games. Now that he's back, just doesn't look, you know, like the Bronson Cafusi they expected him to be. And that's an injury-related thing. And now Alani Fua is injured. So you're talking about your front five, your down three down linemen and your two outside linebackers, and the inside guys aren't making plays and the outside guys aren't healthy. And you start there. And then you realize that that inside there are some limitations, and that the secondary that was thought to be the strength of this defense in terms of depth and caliber of play has been victimized a few too many times by teams that were previously not very productive passing teams, to the point where you wonder just how good they really are. So, yeah, I mean, the defense has been a disappointing surprise for BYU to this point in the season. You know, Virginia is not a great offensive team, but it was tremendous against BYU. Utah State was not a very good offensive team at all. They were excellent against BYU. UConn had its season high in yardage against BYU. Now, at the time, I want to, you know, add a caveat there. Casey Cochran was the quarterback for UConn at the time, and he's better than the number two guy. And Cochran got knocked out in the BYU game and is done for his career. So they got the best UConn team that has played yet this season. That said, you know, UConn still had more yards against BYU than anybody else. You know, Texas was the one game in which BYU's offense and defense played equally well, certainly in the second half, and the numbers and the results all bore it out. Not coincidentally, it was BYU's least penalized game of the season, the Texas game, also resulting in BYU's largest margin of victory. Every other game for BYU has been a bit of a penalty disaster in one way or another. That's another factor we have to look at. But yeah, you would expect the defense to have been better than it has been. You got to go back until, you know, to the Jaime Hill years, Adam, to find the last time BYU allowed this many points in three consecutive games. And, you know, BYU found itself making some pretty drastic changes with all that happening. I don't think it's going to happen this time around, and Broncos kind of said as much today about his thoughts regarding the defense and how it's being coordinated, et cetera. But again, I don't necessarily sweat all those defensive issues if BYU can outscore people. And with Taysom Hill, they were doing that. They just can't do it right now. At least I'd be surprised if they can do exactly what they were trying to do with Taysom Hill no longer with them.
Now, Greg, you mentioned, you know, the defensive backs maybe not being as good as we thought, and the interior of the defensive line not playing up to a sufficient level to cause to take some pressure off of those guys. Is this a, you know, I've read where some people think it's a scheme thing, some people think it's a talent thing. I want to think it's probably somewhere in between. Do you think this is something that can be fixed by maybe a better game plan by Nick Howell on the defensive side of the ball, or do you think this is, unfortunately, that he's got the players he's got, and they just can't necessarily execute the same plans that were working the past few seasons when BYU's defense was so much better?
I don't know, and I don't know that they're not talented enough. I just think that the secondary, which we thought would have been a strength primarily on depth, hasn't made enough plays. But that goes for the entire defense. And this has been a defense just not making enough plays, whether it's on third down or otherwise, whether it's third downs or big plays or long drives. Those are the areas in which BYU's been victimized most right now. I mean, we're talking about a Utah State team that was not showing any ability to drive the ball great distances this season. And there they are with drives of 83 and 87 and 88 yards. And it was the same kind of drive Virginia finished its game off with 2 weeks prior. So the long drives, you know, are surprising to me. Bronco in the past has said, you know, we're a bend not break defense. We'll make them drive a long ways because at some point they're going to make a mistake and not get it in the end zone. Well, they've been putting it in the end zone. So the long drives are an issue. The third down conversions are an issue. Third down and long in particular. BYU doesn't convert third and long. BYU just does not convert third and long right now, and the opponents do, you know, about almost a third of the time against BYU. That's an issue. And then just big plays in general, you know, balls getting past cornerbacks and you know, more than once or twice a game. You know, these are all things that are a concern right now, and I have to go back to my point. I still maintain and always have that at BYU, it's more important that the offense be prolific than the defense be particularly stingy. But on years where the defense is going to give up some points, and this year looks to be one of them, you have to have a great offense. And with Taysom Hill, I think you've got one. Without him, you don't. And that's where they have to, you know, the twain have to meet somewhere. The offense has to somehow find a way to get, you know, 20 to 30 points on the board, and the defense has to figure out a way to start making some plays. You know, if it doesn't turn out that way, BYU will have, you know, for it, a disappointing season. There will always be the asterisk of Taysom Hill. That will be the reason a lot of things won't have happened if they don't happen, Adam. Yeah. But, you know, that's, again, you've got to find a way. There's always a way to win. You just got to find that way. And it's going to, like Bronco said, it's going to need a lot of improvement from a lot of people right now, right this second. Look at Central Florida. They played last Thursday night, so they traveled back home right after the game, I presume. Friday would have been a coaching day and a recovery day. Then Saturday and Sunday were two full work days while BYU did nothing. Monday and Tuesday, both teams are on even footing. But then BYU travels Wednesday while the Knights get another work day, then it's game day. They will have up to 3 days extra of work on this game. And you know darn well their coaches are looking at the game plan now through the, now with the additional incentive of getting a kid making his first FBS start. I say a kid, he's a senior, Christian Stewart, but you know the point. You know, Bronco said he'd be surprised if UCF tries to pressure. Well, I wouldn't. I think they're going to make Christian Stewart's head swim, at least in the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes of that game, and we'll see how he responds.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Greg, we appreciate you coming on. This is obviously hasn't been the best of weeks as BYU fans, but you know, there's, as you said, there is always a way to win. And yep, the good thing about the schedule going through is if you look at the computers and everything else, we don't have probably a top 40 opponent remaining. So there is, as you said, tough games coming up on the road, but they are winnable even with this roster. So,
to me, there's only three gimmies. And I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to say there are two gimmies on the schedule. There are how many games left? Seven games left.
Seven games.
Let me break that down again. There are two gimmies on the schedule: UNLV and Savannah State. at least five other games that you know are include at Central Florida, a game you would have expected the BYU Cougars to win before the Hill injury. Now I think they're field goal underdogs, so that's kind of that's an up for grabs game at Middle Tennessee. You think would be a game BYU wins relatively handily, but it's not quite to the gimme category. That takes care of four games. Then the other three are the ones that are the ones you have to really consider to be again crapshoots and or games you probably aren't expected to win right now.
Yeah,
or at least two of them, at Boise and at Cal.
Yeah,
the game with Nevada at home, you'd think that's a game BYU wins, but I'm going to put Nevada at home comparable to Utah State at home, and they didn't play that well against Utah State. And I think Cody Fajardo, as good as Gerritsen was, I think Cody Fajardo is a bigger threat than Gerritsen. So, you know, this thing turned in a hurry. And again, seven games, two you can count on winning, I think, right now. And the other five, you're going to have to fight, you know, to varying degrees, you know, to get out of there with wins. But, you know, what we're going to discover about this team here in the weeks moving forward is what did the coaches do and how are the players going to come together to make this thing still a possibility? And that's exciting to see. You know, as a broadcaster, as a fan, as a supporter, that's all you want is to see you know your team, you know, rally and be creative and be resilient and make you proud. You know, and in terms of guys that are still going to fight for every, you know, last yard and last second and last point out there. And so there's a lot that remains to be seen, and we get to see it starting on Thursday in Orlando. And I'm very curious and intrigued and kind of excited to see what Christian Stewart and the guys put out there on offense, and then to see if these defensive guys, you know, will have their pride pricked to the point where they can come out and show that we are the defense you thought we'd be at the start of the year. So it's always interesting and always fun. And let's not forget that basketball has now begun to give us another you know, sport to follow and team to track, and so it's a great time. You know, for me, there's women's soccer involved, and they're on a roll right now. So these are still great times to be a BYU sports fan.
Yes, absolutely. And like you said, you know, it's always disappointing when something like this happens. But sometimes when it's the most fun to root for a team when they go out and do something when people weren't expecting much of anything anymore. So
yeah, and BYU will have a few chances to do that. They'll be challenged multiple times the rest of the way in this season. And, you know, ultimately it's a sad thing for Taysom, you know, his health being a primary concern. Such a remarkable athlete and facing another season of rehab, another off-season of rehab for him, which has to be, you know, difficult from a personal standpoint. And then, you know, from the bigger picture with BYU, you know, the dreams of 12-0 and the thoughts of being part of that discussion through October and into November went away in a hurry, and that's a sad thing too. But you recover and find different goals to meet, and again, we'll see it starting on Thursday.
Well, Greg, thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll, of course, encourage everyone to check out your coverage of the Cougars on KSL.com and the Cougar Tracks, and to listen to KSL as well throughout the season.
Thanks, and I probably get you know as much interest in my Twitter feed as anything, and that's where a lot of my stuff ends up now, as you know, Adam. So at Greg Rubel on Twitter, and you can find stuff throughout the day from me there, and I put a lot of stuff down there as well. So thank you.
Absolutely, we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, Matt, welcome to the podcast. And what beautiful state are you calling in from this week?
I'm calling in from the wonderful state of Louisiana.
This is our third straight game where one of us has been traveling. Third straight podcast, I mean. We don't play games.
We are road warriors.
We are road warriors. That is factually correct. That is factually correct. Well, Matt, we have a plethora of tweet bag questions today. So I thought I'd start with one that's a positive tweet. I asked for positive tweets. You know how many I got? One. So we're going to use it. All right. This is from Steve. That's at SLarson801 from the 801 area code, I assume. Steve asks, McMuffin with bacon or sausage?
Bacon.
I'd say bacon.
The answer is always bacon.
It's always bacon. The other thing is, can I get a McGriddle?
Oh, boy.
Because if the answer is I can get a McGriddle, then why are we talking about a McMuffin?
It's been a long time since I had a McGriddle.
Do they even have those anymore?
I don't know.
I don't do breakfast at McDonald's very often like I used to. Maybe it was I don't want my breakfast to have like 1,200 or 1,500 calories.
I'll tell you what. There was a stretch when we were expecting our first child where that's all my wife wanted for breakfast.
Was McGriddles?
Was McDonald's breakfast. That was a glorious time, my friend.
So I don't believe I've told this story on the podcast. When I was a graduate student at Purdue, we did a trip to Chicago to visit companies in Chicago. Most people on the podcast know that you and I both did our MBA at Purdue. By the way, if you want to feel better about BYU, just watch a Purdue football game. But anyway, so we're up in Chicago. We went to the headquarters of McDonald's. All right. So we sit in this big conference room. There's like 12 or 15 of us, and the head of marketing for McDonald's speaks to us. It was really cool, actually. And they were about to come out with the McGriddle. So out of the test kitchen, they roll out, before it's hit stores, the McGriddle and hand it to us. I was in love.
I mean, it was love at first bite, huh?
Oh my gosh, it was so delicious. I was like, why? Why hadn't someone else thought of this already? It's so good. So, anyway, Matt, that's the end of the positive portion of our podcast.
Wow. When the positive portion of the podcast leads to heart attacks, you know it's not going well.
That is true. That is true. So Matt, Justin Sweeney, a frequent listener and tweet bagger, sent in something, and I will post this on the this link on the in the show notes, if you will, on loyalcougars.com. And of course, you can reach us at Twitter at @BYU_RiceShout. You can reach me via email, adam@loyalcougars.com. And of course, check us out at loyalcougars.com. Sweeney has, do you know someone that can fix my monitor? I think I ruined it. And he has a GIF, which is basically some guy punching a computer screen after the Hill injury. So we'll definitely post that. And no, I don't think they can fix that for you, Justin. But before we get on to the game, Matt, let's get some Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
So, Jim McMahon's number is retired, and he's awesome. We've talked about him 3 weeks in a row. Anything you want to add?
Other than he's awesome, yeah. And it was really cool. The jerseys in the stadium, the jerseys, should I say.
Oh, I want one of those so bad.
That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. And the plethora, now we've used the word plethora in two separate contexts tonight.
Would you say there was a plethora of T-shirts?
And the bandanas and the sunglasses. I thought it was great.
Did you see his jacket from the ceremony the day before?
Unbelievable.
Only Jim McMahon could wear a flowered suit coat. So, anyway, yeah, that's pretty awesome. Also, Cougar in the news is Jimmer Fredette, who we talked about.
Yep.
I don't remember if that was the last podcast or two podcasts ago. He scored 17 points, leading the Pelicans. I can't even say that with a straight face, leading the Pelicans. That's really a professional team's name, Pelicans? He led the flock to a...
I just came from the New Orleans airport, so...
Yeah, I know. There's probably... I'm going to get, like, hate mail because I'm hating on the name of the Pelicans. So
really,
Matt,
you really think there's going to be a lot of hardcore Pelicans fans out there? They're a pretty rabid fan base from what I hear.
Yeah. The you know, birds of a feather, I guess. Oh,
come on now.
Hey, low-hanging fruit. That's all I got today. So you, when we talked about Jimmer, were very optimistic about him potentially having a significant role with the Pelicans. I was pessimistic. Do you think this game should change my mind, or do we just say, it's preseason, we'll see once the season starts?
No, I think that I think you should change your mind. I think that the Jimmer Fredette, he's finally come home to roost. I think that his career is really going to take off from here. I think that he's found a flock among birds of a feather. He already used that one, so you kind of stole it from me.
Sorry,
but I think I'm out of bird cliches.
Yeah, I think both of us have the same writer, and we need to fire them. so, all right. So let's discuss
the game. I have to go back to the drawing board and see what else I can hatch up.
So I did not see that one coming. The other ones I saw coming. So let's look at the Utah State game, and we'll do so with some tweet bag questions. Okay.
Tweet bag.
Let's get this first out of the way. This is from John Brame. That's at Johnny Dangerman on Twitter. He asks, "What are the recs for a medical redshirt? Any chance for Taysom Hill to get one? If not this year, then for his freshman year." There are two things. He is not eligible for one. He's played in too many snaps this year. More than 30% of the game, and it didn't happen in our first three games. So, I mean, he's basically, this year is out. I don't think you can retroactively go and get a medical red shirt backwards. So I don't believe he can for his freshman year. So that's kind of out. And the other thing is, everyone that's saying he's done for his career and all this other stuff, we don't know anything yet. So anybody who says anything about that is just making it up right now, right? I mean, the dude had surgery like 36 hours ago. We don't know anything yet. It looked bad, but we don't know anything yet. So to go back to Mr. Sweeney, let's just start off this way, okay, Matt? More concerned, he asks, with Stewart running the O or our porous D? And he parenthetically adds, "He'll cover it up a lot, and now I'm pretty nervous." So, Matt, if you had to pick one, are you more concerned with the O or the D?
Right now, I'm more concerned with the defense, to be honest with you. I think, as we spoke about on last week's podcast, there were some certain elements of the defense that had been, on a limited basis, exposed at that point in the season. And I think what we saw last week with what Utah State was able to put together offensively, that the weak links in the defensive armor are known now to everyone. And what you've got to do to score points on this football team is now very common knowledge. You know, there's people out there with a lot of faith in Christian Stewart and his ability to run the offense. He clearly digs throwing the long ball. And I think he can pass. I think that he'll settle down a little bit and be a fairly accurate passer. I don't know that the offense completely falls apart with him under center. But I'm really worried about what this defense is going to be able to do to adjust to slow people down.
Yeah, so if you look at Utah State, they had a terrible offensive game against Tennessee. I don't care about Idaho State, so let's skip that one. Wake Forest, they did okay against Wake Forest offensively. I don't think Wake Forest is a stout defensive team. Then they had 400 yards but lost to Arkansas State, which quite frankly is just appalling. So coming into that game against BYU, they had shown to be a well below average offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
And they put up, 300 yards of total offense in the first half-ish, give or take. This defense isn't any good. They just aren't to this point. And we can get into the whys. So let's do that, Matt. Sweeney, as well as a couple other tweet bag folks, asked, is it Howell? We talked about this a little bit with Dr. Nick's question last week, Matt. But is it Howell, or do we just not have guys that can make the right plays? Are they just not as good as we thought they were?
I think that we're seeing the effects of, you know, in a couple consecutive years, losing a Ziggy Ansah and a Kyle Van Noy. There is no player on that level on this roster. There's not a single one.
Correct.
And I think that's what we're missing. So, you know, you could get a really solid pass rush on that could help cover up maybe some inadequacy in the defensive backfield. And I think we could get away with that a little bit in the past. there is no marquee pass rusher on this team. There is no combination of pass rushers on this team that will consistently get pressure on a quarterback.
So Fua is now injured. We don't know his status for Thursday night. Kafusi had been injured, and he was back, but did not look nearly 100%. Uh-huh. Not explosive, not strong. I disagree with you. I think he could be an elite pass rusher if he's healthy. Fua has just disappeared, quite frankly. I mean, he has hardly existed during this run of bad defensive performances, and I think our hopes for him being an elite defender don't look very good at this point. Matt, is the double move that rare that it's hard to defend against? I mean, unbelievable that these guys were getting beat on just, not quite frankly, not even good double moves. Just guys running out and ups, really. I thought they were going to be good, Matt. Are they just not good, the defensive backs?
That's the way it's starting to look to me.
I mean, the pressure is part of it, right? It's all connected. If you can't get pressure, the guy's got time. But these guys were wide open past the defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
And there didn't seem to... The one thing I will put on Howell was... In that first half, it became very clear that this was their game plan, and we did not make an adjustment to it until after halftime. And that's too late. That's too late. So Matt, do you expect Jamal Williams to get, like, basically 40 carries a game now?
Yeah, I mean, as we were joking before the podcast started, they might just start snapping the ball straight to him.
Oy.
You know, but Jamal Williams is now the feature of the offense.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I'd love to see the feature of the offense become Jordan Leslie and Christian Stewart throwing it to him deep. I thought there was some opportunity for that against the Utah State defense. I think Jordan Leslie was a better receiver than they had defensive backs.
Yes.
And I think he was faster, bigger, and stronger. There was just not a good way to get him the ball. And so maybe if they can make some adjustments there and get as Christian Stewart gets some more reps and gets more comfortable, maybe he can get the ball to him. But Jamal Williams is, I mean, he is now, he's the offense.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. If there is a silver lining to be taken away, is that Matthews and Leslie both looked like playmakers in very different ways, right? Matthews is not going to beat anybody with quickness, but he's got great hands and he can get above the defense and make a play. And Leslie looked very good. His best game as a Cougar pretty easily. Even his one drop that ended up being an interception was on a tip play, right? So
mm-hmm.
It was a little strange. So Matt, let's talk about, I mean, there's injuries all over the place. But let's go back to Hill's injury. True or false, BYU wins the game if Taysom doesn't get hurt?
False.
True. I think we win it going away. I don't think it's even close at the end.
Really?
Okay, think about this. It's 21-14, right? We get that first down. The next play, they don't end up getting the first down. It's a third and one or whatever. Taysom always gets the third and one, okay? So you drive down, you score before the end of the half. It's 21-21 at halftime. If I told you that was going to be the scenario, would you, at that point, have said, we're going to win that game?
No.
Really?
Yeah, I'm still not confident that we would have won that game.
Utah State's not any
point.
Good, okay? But before everybody, like, they outplayed BYU. Don't get me wrong. This is not, they're not going to run the rest of their table here. They proved in the second half that their offense, we made some adjustments. Now, granted, they went conservative, but even early in the third quarter, it was clear this was, you know, not the same. They weren't going to have... Those same plays weren't going to be available. You know, we were putting safeties over the top. But I think they win if Taysom doesn't get hurt. Now, granted, it's a completely irrelevant argument, right?
Right.
But, so let's go on to Thursday night's game, Matt.
Thursday night lights.
Thursday night lights.
Thursdays.
In Florida. So... Are the Knights any good?
I don't think that they are.
They lost to Penn State. They lost to Mizzou, got killed by the Tigers. They did beat Bethune-Cookman,
who
I believe has a very good badminton team. And then they did beat the same Houston team that we beat by 5 points. And they'll have a week preparation because they also had a Thursday night game. So I agree with you. I don't think they're very good. That being said, let's meet some of their best players, Matt. Now, the good thing for us is it's not Blake Bortles, and he's not walking through that door.
Blake Bortles is not walking through that door.
So Justin Holman is the quarterback, a sophomore. He's actually been okay. Completion percentage is low at 54%, but a decent yards per attempt getting the ball downfield. Their rushing game is not good. They have a decent running back and stand back, but they're averaging less than 3 yards per rush so far this year, which is not good. We know they're wide receivers. They've got a couple of deep threats, but overall maybe not the best. Defensively, they have not been particularly good so far this year, and offensively, they've been terrible. One of the worst offensive in the country, and a defense that's not a whole lot better than that. So let's get to some of our over-unders. The first one I'm going to take from the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
John Brame again, that's at Johnny Dangerman, asks, over-under J Swag Daddy carries for Thursday 23.5. Do you go over and under, over or under 23.5 carries for Mr. Jamal Willis?
Oh,
Williams.
Jamal Williams.
Sorry, I was combining two, a former BYU running back with a current BYU running back.
I'm going to go, we're
23.5.
I'm going over.
Oh, yeah. Steady dose
of J Swag Daddy, I think, Thursday night.
I think he gets 30 touches and probably 25 or 26 of those are carries. I also think you'll see him on a wheel route or a screen or two. They're going to get the ball in his hand. He's not an elite receiving running back, but the key is they're going to try to get him in space. So Matt, we both think we're going to see a lot of Jamal Williams. What about over or under 30 passing attempts for Christian Stewart?
Under.
Man, I've debated this one. I think we're going to run a lot of plays, and I think it's going to be under though as well. I think running is going to be the primary thing. You'll see Hine, you'll see Brown, you'll see a few other things. So wide receiver, Matt, if you had to pick a wide receiver to have a big game on Thursday night, who's not named Jordan Leslie?
Oh, come on!
Yeah, I got to make this hard because that's the easy one. Not named Jordan Leslie, who's the other wide receiver that you think could have a big night?
I'm going to go with Juergens. I think we were really high on Juergens after a game.
Yeah, yeah.
I think in an offense that's going to have to make some adjustments and try and go back to some basics here, I think there's some opportunity for somebody like Juergens to make some plays.
Here's who I think is a potential breakout candidate is Devin Blackman.
Yeah,
only
I can
three
see that.
Catches for 56 yards. Now, granted, that's two fewer catches than your pick, Juergens. I think they're going to try to get him the ball in space so he can use the moves and the speed to make something happen. One of the questions that's being asked, Matt, is do you think the offense is going to be substantially different than the one that Taysom ran? Christian Stewart says no. What does Matt Mangum say?
I think it's going to be a little bit different just in terms of execution. I think that I know that on some of these option plays, it's supposed to be based off of the read, but I think we're going to see the ball not – what am I trying to say? Christian Stewart's not going to carry the ball as often as Taysom Hill did, and they're not going to call plays where he would be – where he could theoretically be carrying the ball as much as Taysom Hill did. I just don't think that's going to happen. For a couple of reasons. One, he's not an elite runner the way that Taysom is. And the second one is if he gets hurt, you got nothing.
Yeah.
So I certainly hope there will be some adjustments to the offense. That, and I think he might be, he may be a more accurate passer, and so we should take advantage of that.
Yeah. The biggest thing is I don't think we know anything about Christian Stewart, because I don't think it's fair to judge him in that Utah State game coming in like he did in a terrible spot without the prep, right?
Agreed.
And to be frank, we may not really be able to judge him even after this week. Short week, again, lots going on. It may be a couple games down the road before he hits his stride.
Yep.
And by the end of the year, we may be saying, oh, well, he's pretty decent. He's no Taysom, but he can win some ball games. But there may be a steep learning curve. I don't think the offense is going to look anything like it did with Taysom. I just, can you imagine him getting 17 carries a game?
No.
I mean, I just don't think that's even, I mean, I'm not saying he's not a decently mobile quarterback or any of that. He can throw the ball a long way. Now, whether he can do it accurately, I don't know yet. But that is something that Hill was not necessarily part of his game, though he tried on occasion. I think you'll see a lot more, as you pointed out, some deep passes. And certainly Kurtz, if he actually plays in this game. They said he came in for two snaps. I don't ever remember seeing him on the field. But if he actually plays in this game, he's supposed to be a burner. And, of course, Blackman and Leslie might be able to get behind some folks as well.
You know, and I know Christian Stewart wants to say, no, the offense will be the same, everything's going to be the same. But if it is the same, I think we're doing something wrong. He clearly has a slightly different skill set than Taysom Hill. The, you know, and you have an opportunity with a new quarterback to switch things up a little bit offensively.
Right.
I think if it isn't changed up some, then that's a problem.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I totally agree. So, Matt, we're going to do a quick draft, as we are prone to do. Let's talk about players that we need to step up with Williams out, and we're going to exclude Christian Stewart from this draft. That's obvious. All right. So
clear number one pick.
Clear number one pick. So let's go, Matt, your number one pick for a player, offense or defense, that needs to step up in lieu of where the season is headed at the moment.
In this particular game. All right. I'm
going
to go ahead here, and I'm going to select. And I feel bad doing this, but I think it's got to be Kaufusi.
That was going to be my first selection. Nice choice.
And I think it's all about being able to get a decent pass rush on. And I understand in this particular case for him, you know, what the production we have seen or not seen at him so far this year is a result of being hurt and a couple of things that kind of are outside of a player's control. But we absolutely need him to step up and get some pressure on the quarterback. Does this mean that they need to put him down on and have him come out of a three-point stance off the edge or do something a little bit differently with him than they had originally envisioned at the beginning of the season? Yeah, probably. But we are going to have to get some pressure on a quarterback at some point.
Yeah, and I worry just because Kaufusi's not at 100%.
Right.
Right? So I worry about that, but somebody's got to step up. I'm going to pick Algie Brown.
Wow.
So the reason I'm
picking... He probably would have been still available in later rounds.
It's two players and a snake draft, so I get the next pick anyway. Somebody else in the backfield is going to need to be productive so that on the plays where Jamal Williams is not in the backfield, when he's off, they don't just pin their ears back and try to kill Christian Stewart. You know what I mean?
Try to kill Christian Stewart.
Bronco said to the media he doesn't believe that UCF will come with a lot of pressure. That's not necessarily their thing. Greg Rebell was just on the podcast. He and I both disagree. I think he will absolutely get pressured in this game. I mean, why wouldn't you? If they don't, I'm happy. But my next player, Matt, is I'm going to pick Fred Warner.
Ooh, interesting selection,
so
my
if
friend.
If Fua does not play or is limited, we're going to need somebody to come up. And as you pointed out, Kaufusi could be that. Right now, I don't know that any of the defensive linemen are capable of being a huge impact player. But Fred Warner certainly is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we need defensive players that'll step up. And I think it could be a Fred Warner.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's something. I don't know if it's really that interesting.
No, that one's pretty good.
So, sir, what about your final pick?
I'm sticking with defense here, interestingly enough.
Well, they could certainly stand to get a little better.
And I'm going to go with Harvey Jackson.
Ah, Harvey Jackson.
Harvey Jackson is, you know, an upperclassman transfer. He's somebody with some experience. Had real playing time at Nebraska before coming to BYU, and by all accounts, has established himself as a leader in the locker room. And I think when you get into a point like this with a team, you need somebody who's going to be able to step up, be vocal, rally the troops, and really get after it. And I think Harvey Jackson might be that guy.
Yeah, it would. You know, Levitt may not be playing, right? So Harvey Jackson could definitely be a guy that steps up. I mean, Levitt had 25 total tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and he's just this, you know, crazy missile that's just flying all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I think he's had like 18 personal foul penalties. I'm kidding, but... you know, very aggressive, very aggressive. If we were drafting farther, Robertson Daniel has got to step up on the
corner
position. He looked lost in coverage last week.
He was definitely getting picked on.
Now, the thing is, he may float back to safety like he did a little bit last year, and we may see different guys on the outside covering. I think that's very possible this year. Matt, of our 3 defensive linemen that play the most, who has the most tackles?
I don't know who has the most tackles.
Who has the most tackles of our defensive line?
But you're kind of Johnny on the spot with the stats.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time in the stats trying to find hope.
Remington Peck?
It is not Remington Peck.
I actually didn't think
Remington
that it was.
Peck. It's, where is he? Where is he? I just had this. Oh, no. I'll probably have to edit this out. This is exciting for everybody. It is... Where is it? Rowley. Graham Rowley with 10 total tackles.
Wow.
And no sacks or tackles for loss. Peck has 1 sack. That is the same as Jordan Preter, the defensive back.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good, dude.
No, it is not.
No, it is not. Jordan Johnson has more sacks than Marquis Johnson. Just saying. All right. So let's move to prediction time, Matt. The line Central Florida at 3.5 favorite. So let's go to your prediction. Who's winning this game?
I think the BYU offense is able to move the ball around a little bit, and will score some points. I think that defensively we're going to continue to see a little bit of a struggle. And unfortunately, I'm picking UCF to win this game. Final score 31-27.
You are much more optimistic about both offenses. I think we're going to see an ugly game. I agree with you that I can't believe this, but I'm picking the Knights 20-17.
I don't know. The Knights have scored points in their other games.
Against who was it again?
Oh, that's right, because we have a top-5 defense.
You don't need a top-5 defense to slow them down. They scored 17 versus Houston. Are they a top-5 defense?
No, they are not.
10 versus Missouri and 24 against Penn State after major jet lag. They're not a good offensive team so far. But of course, Utah State hadn't been either. So there's your argument.
See, what Utah State did is they found a wrinkle that they had not shown anybody else, and they put it out there in this game. You know, they handed the ball to a linebacker who hadn't carried a football since high school, and turned out to do pretty well.
Yeah, he did fine. They didn't rush the ball that well. I mean, everyone's talking about that, like, ooh, that guy had such a great game and whatever. It was fine. He did a good job for a guy that hadn't run the ball since high school.
Good carries and crucial downs.
Yeah, I agreed. But what beat us wasn't that he ran the football. It was they saw that our defensive backs bit on that first move, and they took advantage of it. And the quarterback was incredibly accurate in that first half. But, you know, they only averaged 3 yards a carry rushing the football. I mean, yeah. Vigil, for all everyone's talking about him, he averaged 3.6 yards per carry. I mean, it was okay. And Hill, their number one running back, 3 yards a carry. I still think we can defend the run. The problem is, can we defend the pass, right? I mean, they averaged 12 yards per attempt. I mean, not only did we not get any pressure, we also given up bomb after bomb, you know. 40 yards at a clip. But 2017, I think our defense plays much better this week. I think Howell will be better prepared. But let's get to that here, Matt. Sweeney, who, like most of us, is on the edge of insanity after that Friday game, he said, Nick Howell is the defensive version of Brandon Doman. Discuss. I think it's way too early.
Yeah, I feel like it is a little early. I mean, this is one bad game. And, you know, this is different too. I mean, he's working on defense, which is kind of Broncos' wheelhouse. I think Bronco sees Nick Howell as a mentee. I think there's a lot that's different about that situation. I do see the similarities. This is a guy who's getting his first, you know, coordinator shot at BYU instead of, you know, cutting his teeth at a smaller program. There's those kinds of similarities, but maybe there is some truth to it. I don't know that we know that yet. Is he ready for prime time? Is he not? I'm not quite ready to decide.
Well, let's keep in mind that 2010 defense that he ran, Jaime Hill ran before he got canned, gave up 54 points to Utah, yeah. Right? Statistically speaking, they were worse than this defense. Now, granted, the schedule might have been a little better, so it may not be a fair comparison. I think it's too early. I just think we don't have the athletes who are making plays. Kafusi's injury is a big deal in that. And Fua's not taking that next step is a big deal. I mean, last year he was kind of lost, and there were plays where it didn't seem like he knew what was going on, but it was okay because you had Vannoy, right? And you had Hadley. And you had other players that were going to come up and make some plays. And then Fua could, you know, mess up a time or two. Now he's supposed to be the guy, especially with Kafusi gone. And he just, I mean, obviously people are going to block him and double team him. And he hasn't been able to get past that. But I think we got to give Hal more time. I think you'll see a much better coached game defensively than what we saw last week. So Matt, let's end on hoops.
Hoops? Is it hoop season now?
It's close. It's close, my friend. There's a post on loyalcougars.com by our friend Jeff Johnston, and he says his title is "Why Not This Year for BYU Basketball," Matt. Why not this year?
Why not this year?
And he lists six reasons. Seven, sorry. I apparently can't count. Hawes and Collinsworth. Heard of those guys.
Rings a bell.
I hear they're pretty good. Five seniors after having zero seniors last year. Okay.
Okay.
Three. Now, he thinks they're going to shoot a lot more threes. They did not shoot a lot of threes last year. I agree with him. I think you will see a much higher percentage of three-pointers. Eight of their 10 guys returning from last season, with obviously the big exception being Matt Carlino. And then he says new blood, but I'm just going to put it in two words. Corbin Kaufusi.
Oh, boy.
Grew a couple inches on his mission. And also there were changes in mission plans for Dalton Nixon and Jake Toulson. So there'll be some guys that we weren't expecting to have. Then a lot of depth, which we did not have last year. So that's possible. And Kyle Collinsworth said that basically their only the whole point of this season is they want to get a win in the NCAA tournament and go to a round deep in the tournament. So, Matt, could it be a year where they're flying under the radar, that this is the year that get a WCC crown and maybe a deeper tournament run?
It could be the year. I mean, it's and now is the most fun part of it, right? Is when all of that is still in, when all of those dreams are still intact. It sounds like there's, when you look at it, there's definitely the right pieces of the formula, and there's some stuff to really be excited about with this team. Why not us, right? If you go back to the Twitter handle there.
Yeah. Why not us? Why not us? So Matt, that's all I got for today. Anything you wanted to talk about?
No, I'm good. It was a long sports weekend.
Yeah. 18 innings, huh?
Oh my gosh.
I was listening to that on the radio because, oddly enough, my hotel was that on Fox Sports 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, my hotel was not one of the 10% of American homes that have that stupid channel.
Well, our older brother was present at the ballpark.
Yes, he was for all 18 innings.
Yep.
Oy.
That was tough to watch.
But they won today, so they're back in the series.
Back in it. Back in the game.
All you need is two wins in a row, which isn't that hard in these short series.
And they've got a great pitching staff, so I still like the Nats' chances right now.
It's actually been, as someone that's not rooting for any of the teams because the Red Sox were absolutely terrible this year, it's been a good postseason. There have been extra inning games. There's been some drama. There's been Clayton Kershaw inexplicably giving up like 8 runs.
Yeah, what happened to Clayton Kershaw?
I don't have any idea. Unless he's hurt. The good news is for the Dodgers, that series is tied 1-1. The Game 3 is happening as we record this on Monday night. Kershaw comes back again, and he's not going to have it. Unless he's hurt, he's not going to have another start like that. I wouldn't be surprised if he struck out like 18 and then like just started like screaming and throwing people around.
Yes.
Just coming back with a vengeance, right? Mm-hmm. But it's been a fun baseball postseason so far. I do hope your Nationals can mount a comeback and shut down the Giants.
Oh, it'd be fun.
It would be fun. So, well, we're this has been kind of depressing, really. If people were looking for therapy, we got nothing for them.
I'll tell you what, I feel better now than I did right after the game.
Oh, heck yeah. And I said this to Greg, and I believe this is true, and you can agree or disagree, Matt, but sometimes the most fun in rooting for a sports team is when they have their back against the wall. If they're looking for inspiration, they can look at the Patriots absolutely dismantling the Cincinnati Bengals last night.
Actually, that's true. The end of the sports weekend really has picked up, hasn't it?
Yes. There were talk about, I mean, the unbelievable talk of benching Tom Brady.
Yeah, absurd.
Of talking about how the Patriots' offense was maybe the worst it had been in 15 years.
I'll tell you, the previous week's performance was pretty bad.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. I texted you either during that game or shortly thereafter that I thought they were done and their chances of making the playoffs were about zero.
And it was one of the worst offensive performances I can really remember recently.
Oh, Brady looked terrible. I mean, every quarterback has bad games on occasion, right? even the great quarterbacks. So far this year, he had been a below average NFL quarterback, which I, after that number of games, just seems insane to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he came back, and he was not, and they rushed the ball effectively and all that stuff. And I bring this up not to bore people who are like, don't care about the NFL and definitely not the Patriots. But just to say that that was a fun game to watch. Right?
Yeah, it was.
Because it's like, you know, and I believe Christian Stewart can be a decent enough quarterback if the defense can not give up 30 points a game. But if they're going to give up 30 points, I think it's going to, we're going to be hard pressed not to lose at least two, maybe three more games this year.
Yep, that's probably true.
So, well, anyway, thanks everybody for listening. You, of course, can catch us at loyalcougars.com. Tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Email Adam@loyalcougars.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!